Hello, Bob Wells here, and welcome to another edition of Undercurrent Stories. In today's show, I'm joined by Penny Mallory. Penny made her childhood dream come true when she became the first woman in the world to compete in a World Rally car for Ford in the World Rally Championship. To this day, she remains the only woman to have achieved this. Following on from this, she's become a boxer, marathon runner, mountaineer, TV presenter, author, and she's now recognised as the UK's leading authority on mental toughness. Currently a keynote speaker, she gives talks and coaches groups that include Coca-Cola, Microsoft, F1, TEDx, and many more. I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to speak to Penny. It will be good to understand more about mental toughness, and I hope that our listeners will enjoy the conversation and take away something that they can use in their everyday lives. Hello and welcome to the show, Penny.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Great to have you on. And it's nice that Undercurrent Stories now can be put alongside Microsoft, F1, TEDx and all those others.
Well, that's as it should be.
Absolutely. First of all, before we talk about mental toughness, could you just tell us a bit about yourself, please, and your life's journey and how you decided to become involved in motorsport right through to your keynote speaking and coaching career?
Oh, Bob, it's quite a story. I just don't know where to start because everything is so intertwined. But I watched something on television when I was 7 or 8 years old. I don't know how old I was. And I didn't know at the time I was watching the RAC rally. And when I saw these rally cars on TV as a kid, I was transfixed. And I thought, one day I'm going to grow up and be a rally driver. And that was turned out to be a ridiculous impossibility because of the way my life went. And so that's another story which I can fill you in with. But many, many years later, you know, in my early 20s, I took myself off to a rally school because I'd sort of hit rock bottom and I knew that I could do something stupid or something brilliant. And I went to a rally school and it was the most brilliant thing I ever did in my life. It changed the course of my life and I went on to become a rally driver, a rally champion and do all these amazing, fantastic things that I was sort of driven to do. But I need to sort of, I suppose, fill in the context of my childhood because it did have a profound effect on me becoming a rally driver, weirdly. So I grew up in, I suppose, what the outside world would have seen as a very privileged environment. Nice house, nice car on the drive, the odd family holiday abroad. I had some private education for a short period of time. You know, would have looked really very nice on the outside, but inside the house was quite a different story. I hero worshipped my dad, but I was very scared of him. My mom was very, very poorly all of my childhood, all of my growing up. She was an alcoholic. She was a chain smoker, but she was also a really, really severe manic depressive. So she spent most of my childhood in the loony bin, as they called it in those days, the psychiatric hospitals. And so I sort of bumbled through life, not really understanding life, what was going on. And my parents didn't seem to be parenting me like everyone else's. My friends' parents were parenting them. And I was just all angry and confused and stuff. So I misbehaved to get attention. I ran away quite a lot to get attention. And by the age of 14, I just sort of thought, this is rubbish. I want to leave. So I left at 14, left home, never went back, and ended up in homeless hostels in London and didn't speak to my father for 20 years. And wow. It was when all of this sort of rubbish life that I was ended up living, everything sort of collided into a moment where I thought, I'm either got to do something stupid or brilliant. And if I could become a rally champion, maybe I could, you know, maybe I could make my dad proud after all 20 years of not seeing him. So it was a really weird collision of circumstances, dreams, ambitions, ideas, and a little bit of desperation thrown in probably.
And that's what sort of, pardon the pun, drove you to sort of get in to prove something in the rally driving. You felt that you had to do something in life that you could almost prove to your father how good you were?
Because he disowned me when I was 14 and he said, you're a disgrace. I'm ashamed of you. I don't want anything to do with you. And it hit me so hard. And I didn't realise that, and it was very subconscious, but I think I spent the rest of my life trying to prove to him that I wasn't anyone to be ashamed of and I could make you proud and maybe I could make you love me. And, you know, all that kind of stuff that was really subliminal and sort of sat in my belly. And so it's amazing, isn't it, how that sort of search for parental approval is so, so intense that I was prepared to knock down every obstacle in my path to becoming a rally champion. And trust me, there were plenty of them. It didn't really matter to me because the most important thing was to be a rally champion because I think that would make him proud. And that was what drove me. And I'm not sure that I fully understood that then, but looking back, it's very clear what was going on.
And did he, I mean, were you speaking to him when you became a champion at that point?
No, I wasn't. I had two children and I felt really guilty that he had grandchildren that he didn't know about. So I wrote to him and I said, this is 20 years later, hi, remember me, can I bring my children to meet you? And he took a while to reply, but he said, yes, please do. And I went to meet him and it was very weird, very awkward, no eye contact, talked about the baby and the weather, but we didn't talk about anything that had gone previously in our lives. And I saw him a few times and then he died. And when I was clearing his flat, I found loads of press cuttings that he'd clearly collected over the years without me realizing. He'd been watching everything, watching me on telly, watching me drive. So in a funny way, I suppose I got the approval.
Immensely proud of you.
He never said a word, but I think he wouldn't have cut those things out if he wasn't proud. So I sort of achieved my aim.
Yeah. I'm keen to sort of talk about it, about your career on a chronological basis, but and obviously we're talking detail about mental toughness coming soon, but you then obviously you had a fantastic career, you know, in driving, and then you got into television and stuff like that. I mean, this is still sort of Division One stuff, isn't it? I mean, you were still hungry. You obviously continued that hunger for adventure and proving things beyond the driving.
Yeah, I did. And the thing is, a lot of it happened not by design, I have to say. So when you drive, you don't make much money. There's only a handful of people in the world who make good money out of it, and I wasn't one of them. And I'd spent so much time driving that I was really didn't have any other skills. I was unemployable. So when somebody suggested that I presented a car program, I was like, oh my God, what a brilliant idea. I don't think I need a CV for that. I can just step in. So, and I was screen tested by Channel 4 and was so lucky to present Driven, which was a car program on Channel 4 for some years with Mike Brewer and Jason Plato. And we had the best time, but I promise you, I never dreamt that would happen. And I certainly didn't expect it to happen, but it was a beautiful surprise. And of course, that doesn't also qualify you to do any other job either. So when when one TV show ends, which is devastating, you look for another one. And I managed to keep that going for about, I don't know, 12, 15 years. But ultimately, there are no car programs being made anymore. So that's not a career for anyone particularly. So I ended up speaking at events, and I've just managed to forge myself a career as a keynote speaker talking about mental toughness, which I love. It's the best job I could ever have.
Yeah, it's amazing that you had that sort of difficult childhood, probably is an understatement, but a challenging environment where you were forced to, I guess, develop your mental toughness. I mean, perhaps at this point, could you just explain how you define mental toughness?
Yes, I think that's important because people make so many assumptions, and maybe I should dispel some myths. So first of all, mental toughness sounds quite macho and aggressive, like mental toughness. And of course, the reality is it's not really any of those things. It's actually lots of soft skills, empathy, and very much about self-awareness and compassion and deep listening and all those wonderful things. But the academics will tell you that mental toughness is a personality trait that explains why we do some things and why we don't do some things. It's about our ability to manage stress and pressure, challenges and changes. Most mentally tough people can sort of take challenges in their stride and get quite excited about the opportunity that lies in this problem. And some people, the mentally sensitive end of the spectrum, maybe don't cope so well with stress and pressure, but will have other things to offer. So on the whole, mental toughness works very well for you. But it is possible to be mentally tough and mess everything up and be mentally sensitive and be very successful. So mental toughness is something on the whole that is an advantage. If I put you under pressure and asked you to perform, it'd probably be useful to you if you could rise to that challenge rather than crumble into a heap. So these are things that I hadn't realized I'd been developing these traits and these abilities since I was born because of the environment I'd been brought up in. And when I came across the mental toughness concept a few years ago now, everything sort of fell into place. And there's four aspects of mental toughness, which I'll just quickly whiz through because I think your listeners will resonate with all of them. So four areas that actually break down into another two, but that's probably too much detail for now. But on simply put, they all begin with C. Mental toughness is about the sense of control you have of your life, of your emotions. If you feel you're in control of stuff, it's nicer. You'd probably be more successful, more enjoyable. If you can manage your emotions, don't get infected by other people's emotions, that can be quite useful. I've been out of control. It's a horrible feeling. Challenge. So your ability to see every challenge you face as an exciting opportunity. You know, what's great about this problem? If you can, yeah, like I say, if you're not sort of knocked sideways by something, you can take things in your stride. It's a much healthier way to live. And then there's your commitment, which is the promises you make to yourself, the extent to which you are prepared to set a task and do what is necessary to complete it. And a lot of people think they're committed to things, but I've always thought you can't be a bit committed. You are either in or you are out. And if you are a bit in, then you are also a bit out, which means you are not committed. You are having a go. So what is commitment? And, you know, if you really think hard about the things you think you're committed to, and it's quite an interesting exercise to understand that perhaps you're not quite as committed as you thought you were, and what might happen if you were committed. And then lastly, there is confidence. So this is the confidence you have in your ability to get something done. I always had quite a high level of confidence in my ability. Not that I had much ability, but my confidence was quite high. And so I believed I could do something, even if I didn't have the skill, I had the confidence. Lots of people have a high level of skill in things, but don't think they can do it. I had low level of skill, but quite a high level of confidence. And the world is made up of a mix of all of those. And also your confidence in managing and dealing with people, your interpersonal confidence, because none of us will ever achieve anything on our own. So it's the extent to which you're prepared to engage with other people to make the thing happen, because we can't all be brilliant at everything. We need to lean on other people to fill in the gaps. So that's, in a nutshell, very small nutshell, what mental toughness is. And I don't think there's a human being on earth that doesn't resonate with what I've just explained. It's really relevant to all of us.
Yeah, thank you for that. You made that very succinctly and easy to understand. In terms of the confidence bit, I'm intrigued by the confidence bit because obviously you left home at 14. You then decided to get into motor racing and stuff like that. Were you confident as a teenager, or was it the sort of living on the streets and the hostels and things that grew your confidence, would you say? Or were you, well, or was it inherent in you?
Yeah, I was a... So on some levels, I have high confidence, and on some levels, my confidence to this day is very low. And it depends what area of your life you're talking to me about. But I didn't have much confidence as a child because I wasn't academic. I didn't succeed at school. I was so deeply below average. It was horrible because all my friends were really smart, and I just couldn't get the marks they were getting. So my confidence was always low. I wasn't sporty. The only thing I could do was draw and a bit arty. So my confidence was low in my ability at school. But when I left home and I started sort of fending for myself and became fiercely independent, I found that I was racing ahead of other people in life because I could get things done and I was super resourceful. When the chips are down, I sort of come out of my shell and I can really make things happen. And so that gave me the confidence when I was really in a tight situation. I got myself out of it. I thought, oh, hang on a minute, I can do this. I can do life. and all of the problems that it chucks at me. And then when you get yourself involved in motorsport and you think, heck, this is going to be quite a struggle to get the sponsorship, to get the car, to get the team, and then to keep on getting the sponsorship, because the only way you're going to drive, girl, is to find somebody else to pay for it. I became quite good at getting sponsorship. So my confidence rose that I could actually make this happen. And like it or not, motorsport is all about money. If you've got the money, yes, you can buy the car. If you've got a great car, you can get better results. And I'm afraid to some degree money buys success. So my confidence grew in terms of being able to achieve certain things, because I knew that I could just get resourceful. But of course, there's lots of things that knock your confidence along the way. And I'm just like an ordinary human being, you know, one text message, my confidence can be rock bottom. I don't think that's unusual. So I'm a weird mix. And I think most people are sort of complex mix of confidence in some stuff and very low confidence in other stuff.
One thing I'm really intrigued about is you look at a lot of successful people. When I say successful people who have achieved a lot in their life, they're top of their game, they've climbed Everest or whatever, top of their sport. And there's this thing about, you know, how hungry they are to actually get to that point. You have to be hungry to go for it. What's the dynamic between mental toughness and hunger for success?
Well, I think if you're hungry for success, you will require mental toughness. That's, you know, your resilience, your ability to get knocked down and bounce back up again and just keep going. And some people get knocked down and don't get back up again. If you can, you know, if you have any kind of dream, and for some people, it, you know, it could be a relatively small thing, but for me, they've always been quite big and quite ambitious. If you set your sights on something, it's never going to be a smooth path. You are going to have disasters, crashes, you're going to be let down, everything. There's going to be all sorts of things going wrong along the way. And every time you get knocked down, that's your opportunity to give up, walk away. And I was just a little bit too stubborn for that. And I think a little bit of me got quite excited when something bad happened, because I could put myself to the test and how I could show myself how good I could be at turning this situation around. It's almost like I was out to impress myself. But of course, what I was subconsciously doing was trying to impress my dad. But there's still a little bit of me now, something I'm wired a bit wrong, I think, that when something really tough happens, a little of me, there's a bit of a glint in my eye, like, okay, let's just see what we can do with this. And I quite like the idea of that challenge. So I have channeled it into some sporting stuff, which is really weird because I was never sporty at school. But that kind of proving that I think I can do something that is unusual or would surprise me. I quite like the idea of stretching myself, getting out of my comfort zone and doing things that are hard. I don't know that most people have that approach. Most people like quite safe, comfortable, predictable lives. It's easier, isn't it, really? Mm. And I don't think many people like getting out of their comfort zone. And you can, you know, read lots of old cliche quotes, but it is when you're uncomfortable and you're stretched and pushed, that is when you really find out what you're made of. So to me, that's got to be a good thing.
So if you're somebody who is, let's say, average — when I say average, I mean somebody who's not, doesn't regard themselves as particularly mentally tough, but mm-hmm. on the other hand, that they're not weak. If that, is it something that can be learned and developed with people, do you think?
So I will have to pick you up on the word weak, because the opposite of mentally tough is not mentally weak, it's mentally sensitive. Because sensitive people are amazing, compassionate, empathetic, beautiful, creative, curious people too. So, you know, there's nothing right or wrong here. Yeah. But you can develop mental toughness every day of your life. I've just had 365 ways to develop mental toughness published. Get it on Amazon. And in that, there is something you can do every day, and it's endless. some people would say that practicing tolerating discomfort will build resilience, will build determination, will build focus. So I don't know if there's something you really don't enjoy doing or feel quite uncomfortable doing, but if you did it a little bit every day, easily within a week or two, it wouldn't feel half as uncomfortable.
Is cold shower in that book?
Cold shower is in that book. That's obviously slightly extreme. It could be holding the plank position. It could be that there's a report on your desk that you just can't bear to get through. It might be getting to the end of that report. It could be doing something that is slightly either uncomfortable or not very pleasurable, but you just stick with it and you get to the end of it. And then suddenly the next report doesn't feel quite so hard to get to the end of, or, you know, holding the plank position for 3 minutes rather than 30 seconds doesn't feel like a big deal. So there's lots and lots of things, but usually life throws something at us every day that will test our mental toughness. And it's about recognizing and hearing, noticing those cues and just going, okay, I'm not going to avoid it today. I'm going to actually go head on into this. So there's always something that life will chuck at us most days that could help us to develop mental toughness.
Yeah, I often find that if I've got a particular chore to do or whatever it is, or a difficult phone call to make, once you actually make that move, the universe sort of comes with you, and it seems to be a lot easier than what you thought it would be.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of people say if you're on your to-do list, the one thing that you're going to put off till tomorrow is the one thing you should do first, because the rest of it's going to feel like an absolute doddle. And most things don't go as awfully as you think they might. You sort of catastrophically think of the worst possible outcome, and usually it doesn't go that way. So that's one thing I would always recommend people to do. You know, the worst, most horrible, avoidable thing on that list, do that first.
Ron, when you give talks to some of these companies and coach and stuff like that, what do you personally get out of it when you start seeing? Do you see change? Do you go back into the companies and see what's happened? What do you get out of it?
Occasionally I do go back in and I work. I do a 45, 60 minute keynote. I get people thinking about their mental toughness, what would happen if they developed it. I tell my story a little bit. I explain the concept. And usually you can hear a pin drop, which I love, because it means either everyone's fast asleep or I've got them, and I'm happy to report most of the time it's not because they're asleep. It really does get people thinking about how they might do things differently. And that, to me, is where the pleasure lies, because if in the last 60 minutes of your life I have helped you in some tiny way to cope with that thing, manage that thing, address that thing, just handle it in a different way, then job's done. You know, I'm a happy girl. And more often than not, people will come up to me at the end of it and say, that's just what I needed to hear today. It happened to me yesterday. Somebody said, I'm so glad I came, because that's exactly what I needed to hear. She, poor girl, having such a hard time, and it just sort of put everything back into perspective for her. And honestly, moments like that, they're absolutely priceless. And that's why it's the best job in the world, because if I can just have some tiny impact on somebody somewhere, if somebody's just gets out of bed early in the morning rather than staying in bed till the afternoon, or, you know, whatever difference it might make, it's an absolute privilege. And I know that sounds really corny, but it really is. Most people don't get to do what I do, and I do get to do it, and I'm so grateful for it.
In terms of today's society, mental toughness and all the rest of it, I mean, we've been in a situation now for about 70 years where we haven't had a war. We've been quite comfortable. Up until recently, the NHS was sort of doing okay. Obviously, it's under a few issues at the moment. Do you think our younger generation have the opportunity to be as mentally tough as perhaps some of the older people?
Now, this is where we get into difficult territory, Bob, because people have to be careful what they say these days, and I'm not very PC. You and I grew up in a world where, you know, we were riding our bikes around the street. We disappeared for the whole weekend, came back for tea, and, you know, nobody kept an eye on us. There was no phones. There was no complications. It was quite basic and straightforward. And if we fell over, we picked ourselves up and we got on with it. And we were resilient to our environment, and we grew up quite tough. You know, we could cope with stuff. And I don't want to get political because that's not my bag, but for sure there is a lot more interference in people's minds than there was when we were kids. That's not nice for the younger generations, my children included. I think there is a lot of support for people that we didn't experience. We just found a way to sort of pick ourselves up and get on. These days it's possible to fall over a bit and have someone support you. And sometimes supporting somebody is not helping them, because when you take the support away, they fall over again. So for me, the best sort of support you could offer anyone is to help them to develop mental toughness, because if everyone's propping everyone else up, it's just going to be a pack of cards. And that really scares me. So I would, this is just not going to be what, this is just not PC, but I know what I'm about to say is what most people think. You know, perhaps people need to learn to toughen up a bit, because this world is a tough environment. And it does worry me slightly if people aren't more resilient, what will happen in 10, 20, 30 years' time? Yeah. It's not, I know, I'm not meant to say any of that stuff out loud, am I, these days? But that's what I think.
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a bit of tough love. And I even remember my parents saying to me, because I was obviously too young for national service, but they used to say to me about, you know, seeing lads going in the 1950s, coming out, going, leaving their mother's apron strings as young boys and coming back as men. And I guess in certain sort of demographics and societies, to have that opportunity to get out and go away for a couple of years, to grow yourself, you're actually developing your mental toughness in that
time. Exactly. Yeah. And it just hadn't been described or defined in that way, but that was effectively what was happening. And, you know, it grew some pretty extraordinary people. You know, our grandparents and parents, actually, and beyond, were pretty tough. And I don't see that in the same way these days.
You mentioned courage earlier on, and that's something that I'm keen to explore. Because obviously to be mentally tough, you've got to have a certain amount of courage. And I guess your book that sort of helps you every day, 365 days, gives you little small steps of courage. How important is courage, do you think?
Well, courage is a combination of confidence, isn't it? That I can have the courage to do it. I believe I can do it. And it's a little bit of commitment, and it's a little bit of having control, because, you know, if I have the courage to do this, then I can probably control the outcome a little bit. So it's a really big part of mental toughness. I have done so many things that I've been utterly terrified to do, but have done them anyway.
Can you give some examples of those, Penny?
Well, I mean, just stepping into the boxing ring. So, you know, I trained for a year, 1,000 hours of training, got into the ring, and just I've never been so terrified in my life. And I'd been told I was going to fight for 3 2-minute rounds. No one had mentioned to me that when you walk through or step through the ropes into a boxing ring, you enter a parallel universe of time, and suddenly 3 2-minute rounds is 3 2-hour rounds. No one had bothered to mention that to me. So I'm stuck in the ring with somebody half my age who's built like a brick outhouse, who absolutely wants to kill me. And I'm not feeling confident. I'm utterly terrified. But, you know, she knocked me out within seconds of the first bell ringing, but I literally bounced back with a whole new level of courage, because I had two choices here. I literally run away, or I dig so deep and impress myself with what I've got. And I had no idea how this was going to go. Of course, I mean, in the end, it was fine, and it went exactly the way I'd hoped. But I'd never been so terrified, never been so exhausted in my entire life. But it was possibly the fastest acceleration of mental toughness that I could have ever experienced, because I literally had a thousandth of a second to reset my mind, my attitude, my approach, and my courage to do something I was terrified of.
Do you always have something on the go where you challenge yourself?
Yeah, I've always got something on the go. There's always something. And I'm usually doing something that's deeply uncomfortable, just because that's, you know, I also want to practice what I preach. You know, I don't want to get.
I was going to say that must help and give you a bit of kudos when you're actually talking to a group of people. Say, oh, actually, I've just done this. Or yeah,
yeah. I'm not saying, you know, if you don't do this stuff, you're not mentally tough. That's not it at all.
No,
think I ought to be able to do is to say, look, I'm prepared to practice what I preach. I put myself in these situations because I learn stuff. And this is the kind of stuff I learn. And you don't have to do anything to this level, obviously. You don't have to do any of it. But it would be interesting, perhaps, to experiment on some level of how you can grow, change, develop yourself in some way. I mean, I don't see why that wouldn't be a good idea. But because I like to practice what I preach, I have pretty much spent my whole life pushing myself to do some really difficult, hard, tough stuff.
Have you got anything coming up that's of interest?
Well, I was meant to row the Atlantic Ocean a few months ago, but that didn't happen. I did a half a year of training, and then the team, that didn't work out. So I've signed up to row in 3 years' time. So that will happen, and that's a real big one.
Across the Atlantic?
Yeah. And I'm terrified of water, so, you know, this is like the ultimate scary thing. So in the meantime, I'm powerlifting, and I've got a competition at the end of this year, so I'm just hoping that I can powerlift, and it's three disciplines, powerlift in those three disciplines, enough weight that is respectable for my age, and size and weight and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I would like to impress myself with something, you know, and I know that if I put the training in, it will happen. It's a process.
You can do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know what it's like. I've run, I think, five marathons altogether. I did three Londons, and I know that after I did that, in fact, during the point of the training, you feel so good after you've done it and what you've achieved. It's fantastic. And the other thing I did was an outward bound course up in Loch Eel when I was about 19, learning how to, you know, climb rocks and rock climbing and abseiling and stuff like that. And again, the exhilarating feeling that you get when you know you've climbed up something that you were scared of originally is fantastic.
And the thing is, marathon running takes an enormous investment of time, because you have to run so many miles for minimum 4 months. And it's usually if when the marathon is in April, you know, it's through the dark, wet, muddy months. Yes. It's a massive commitment. But of course, the buzz you get when you get home is incomparable.
Once you've had that shower.
The running of the marathon, in my experience, was miserable. I hated it.
Did you?
But I couldn't wait for it to be over. But the medal, it's all forgotten, isn't it? All the pain is forgotten when you get that medal. And that's what I did it for, to prove that I, who had never run at all, could run a marathon. And everyone can. 16 weeks, every person can run a marathon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In terms of your audience, heavily corporate, obviously. I'm very interested to know two questions, really. One is on opportunities that you might consider or that you are already doing and had discussions with in terms of younger people with education and stuff like that. And the second one is, what about retired people? When I say retired people, I mean people who have sort of left their jobs, but they're perhaps doing other activities now. What sort of opportunities are there for learning mental toughness if they feel they need it in those two groups?
Well, let me start with the older category, because I find this really interesting. A lot of people spend their lives working, and then they stop working and retire, and their purpose is just gone. And some people struggle with it, and some people just come alive because they've got all the time to do what they want to do rather than what they need to do or have to do. So I'm really interested in how, because I can't imagine retiring, I'm really interested in how people repurpose their lives with sort of so much flexibility and opportunity suddenly available to them, and time. young people is really quite complicated, I think, because I don't know about you, but it took me a while to grow into my own skin. And working with young people, I find quite challenging because they haven't necessarily had a huge experience of life and what life will throw at you. And that's what teaches us stuff. So it's difficult to, I find it difficult to work with kids on mental toughness who are just got to have some life experience to sort of build a foundation. I have worked with some younger people, but I don't know, it's just maybe not my bag, and maybe other people are better at this sort of territory than I am. Life will teach young people to develop mental toughness if there's just people around to encourage them to pick themselves up and go again and not give up and not offer, this is going to sound wrong, but not offer too much support that person can't stand alone without that support. So I think the young people is quite a challenge because also, like I said, there's so much to fill their minds that isn't real. It's, you know, all online, and that's a real mess. That just messes with your head. So you have no clarity. We didn't have any of that complication, did we, when we were kids? Everything was quite clear and easy to manage, and it's just not like that anymore. So I find that a big challenge, but I'm really interested in older people who have lived a life, been battered by life's challenges, have got through it all, and then now what?
Now what?
I just think that's a really interesting conversation to have with people.
Yeah, going back to the youngsters, I mean, yeah, I was a cub when I was a little boy, and that was great because you'd go away camping and stuff and got away from your parents and stuff like that. And I wasn't hugely into sport, but I know a lot of lads that were, and girls, and I think that probably helps as well.
I think the Scouts is a brilliant organisation, and, you know, the D of E stuff, you know, all that kind of outward boundy stuff that gets kids away from the complications of life, you know, just fresh air, nature's challenges, and some physical activity and physical challenges have got to be such a great way for kids to grow up and to learn about life.
Yeah. What advice would you give somebody who was sort of following along in your type of career in terms of wanting to become a keynote speaker, Penny?
Well, I try not to give advice to anyone because everyone's experience is different, but for people, so I never planned on being a keynote speaker. And because it was never really a plan, I didn't have a plan of attack for it. I found out how this industry works bit by bit. What I've now learned, I wish I had worked out 15 years ago. It's the most fantastic industry to work in. I get to meet incredible people every day. And I get to talk about my subject that I'm so passionate about. You know, it's not an easy thing to get right. I was speaking 15 years ago, and looking back, I was rubbish. It's just awful. It's, you have to go through that pain of being honest with yourself and saying that was rubbish. I need to work on this. But, you know, you could be an Olympic swimmer and be a really terrible speaker. And you could be a really low profile someone, but be an amazing speaker. So just the fact that you've achieved stuff doesn't make you a good speaker. That's one lesson number one. So it doesn't matter what you've achieved. You just have to be a great communicator and just learn how to get under people's skin. Then there's the commercial aspect of it, which is a completely massive subject. And I do occasionally work with people who want to build a speaking career and sort of fast track them through the years of stuff where I was floundering and messing up and getting it all wrong. But if you can get it right, and really the only way to be a good speaker is to be really good at speaking.
And I guess you've got to be passionate about your subject and believe so much in your subject that your audience believe you, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think you just have to be really good at speaking, and that's easy said and not easy done. You've got to be funny. You've got to have, you know, highs and lows in your talk. I think it has to sort of, you have to be very clear about what you're trying to land with these people and then endorse it with your own experience, other people's experience, whatever. But don't try and tell the audience 10 things. Tell them one thing or tell them three things. But keep endorsing it and make it – don't just start at A and talk through to Z. You've got to make it a sort of cyclical experience. And there's some technical things that just make a good speech brilliant if you get those things right. And I see speakers all the time because I go to events. I'll see the speaker before me or the speaker after me. And sometimes you're blown away. And sometimes you think, wow, that was really dull. Yeah, I mean, and also the danger is to stand on stage and just talk about yourself. Well, no one really cares about anyone except themselves. It's the truth. So I try very hard to talk about you in the audience. I'm talking about you, your life, not mine. I'll tell you a couple of stories, but really this needs to be back to you. And I think people forget that. They sort of get the ego takes over on stage and it's the me show, and that's not my bag at all. So there's lots of things about being a speaker that need considering, but ultimately you've got to have a great speech and you've got to be a great speaker.
One other question I've got is, we'll obviously put your details of the books and the website on the show notes, but if you were to sort of... And you mentioned three things there. Could you leave listeners with, say, three things that they could do when they get up tomorrow that will you think will help them develop their mental toughness, Penny?
Mm-hmm. I could say you could, if you haven't got a heart condition, you could start the day with a cold shower for 1 minute. It's cold water. Just some deep nose breathing as your heart rate races up and you're filled with adrenaline and you hyperventilate. Sounds nice, doesn't it? Just sticking with that will probably help you to face anything that will come across your desk tomorrow. So I would say give it a go. You could then just spend the day talking more slowly. When we speak really quickly and try and get lots of information across, it shows that we're perhaps not confident in what we're saying, and that might affect the trust somebody has in us. When you slow your speech down, people tend to really deeply listen to what you're saying, gives you more time to construct what you're going to say. And all of those things help your confidence. So keeping eye contact, speaking more slowly, smiling is infectious. You cannot talk to somebody who's smiling and not end up smiling yourself. You could do a random act of kindness. Just pick up a piece of paper for somebody, put it on their desk. You know, straighten the label in the back of somebody's jumper. I mean, whatever it is, it could be a big thing, could be a small thing, but a random act of kindness is massive. It changes the hormones in our body, which makes us feel good. So we get a huge rush of oxytocin and we feel happy and pleased with ourselves. That's also infectious because the person you've helped will probably want to do it to somebody else. So there's loads of things like this that don't cost us any time, really, don't cost us any money, but will massively affect our mental responses to situations. I mean, every human being, you know, heads full of thoughts, it's your mental responses that determine the outcome of everything. So give 10 people the same challenge, they'll all respond mentally to that challenge in some different way, which will massively affect the outcome. So, yeah, tomorrow, there's lots of little things you can do, but as long as your mental response, even to a crisis, is as positive, as hopeful, as optimistic as possible, you're much more likely to have a successful outcome.
Oh, well, thank you for that. That's really useful stuff. Where can people find out more about your work, Penny?
Just type my name into Google, I think, these days, and it'll take you to my website. There's plenty of information on there. I'm on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, all the usual suspects. I'm there. But there's a YouTube channel as well with some more information on mental toughness. So, yeah, easy to find me.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, it's been a really great conversation, Penny. It's been interesting to learn more about mental toughness and discover the benefits that people can use at work, in teams, or also outside work to improve their lives. My guest today has been Penny Mallory. Penny is a keynote speaker and leading authority on mental toughness. And you can find a link to Penny's website on the show notes. Thank you for coming on the show, Penny.
Thank you, Bob, very much for having me.
I really hope you enjoyed today's show and got something out of it. And I would like to ask a favour. If you think some of your friends and family would enjoy the episode, please share the link with them. Really appreciate this. It helps the show grow by spreading the word, and we look forward to bringing you more Undercurrent stories. Thank you.